Conscious Living and Power Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Special show today is a twofer, okay? We've got two fabulously qualified and entertaining and fun and enlightened ladies who are joining me today to talk about dogs. The supposedly enlightened person's guide to raising a dog. And this is Kat Young and Lisa Tenzin-Dolma. I've known Lisa for years. What kind of connected with Lisa for years because of a long time ago, a tarot thing that was on the internet I just loved. And when she got into the dog helping and dog raising and dog behavior stuff, I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And Kat Young, I just was introduced to because of this really, really cute little dog. And this is what the book is about. So thank you. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Wendy, for having
us. Thank you for
Now, who do I give the lead off to? Kat, do you want to start and say how this started? Because you're the one who called for SOS help from Lisa once you got your little darling.
Well, I did. And in short, I've been a cat person for most of my life. I currently have five. And I was just a very happy little cat person. And then, just like you, Wendy, I met Lisa online through the Glastonbury Tarot, which
yes.
is one of the most extraordinary tarot decks I've ever seen, and it's something that you can get readings online all the time. So I met her through that. We became friends, and then her stories about her own personal dogs and the amazing books she has written, 35, but several on dogs, I sort of subconsciously fell into this dog love pit. And then when I met her dog, Charlie, in England, when I visited, it was just love at first sight, and I had this connection. So when I found this little dog being adopted at a Christmas party in Toluca Lake a few years ago, I fell in love. It was like Cupid's arrow. And then I was dumb enough to think that a cat person could become a dog person overnight. And because Lisa made it look so easy. So I adopted this dog, and then she was a very spirited, lovely, wonderful dog, but way more than I bargained for. And then I had to do an SOS to Lisa. Now what do I do? And that's how we got the book started.
Okay, now we're going to dive in with Lisa because she's on a time limit. And Lisa, I have watched Sky, I've watched Charlie, I've watched the things that you have done with your dogs all through the ups and downs of when they get ill, when they get hurt, when you have such a way, and you make it look effortless. So thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Wendy.
When you were doing the Glastonbury Tarot, did you ever expect that this was going to be your life with the dogs and the behavior school that you started, all of that?
No, not at all. It's really funny. I grew up with dogs. We always had dogs, and I always loved dogs. But what happened was I was fostering a dog, and he had lots of behavior issues, and that made me decide that I wanted to really learn more. I've always been fascinated by what makes people tick, hence the Glastonbury Tarot and lots of my other books. But I really, really wanted to learn how dogs tick, what they think about, how their minds work, why they behave as they do. And so I trained as a canine psychologist, loved it, and did a year's work for charities for free, worked with over 500 dogs in the first year, and then was looking around at other courses and realized that, in fact, there was very little available for people to train professionally using only force-free do no harm methods. And so I decided that I would set up the school, the International School for Canine Psychology and Behavior. And it took 2.5 years to set that up. And of course, in the meantime, I was working with lots more dogs and had Sky and had other dogs living with me, foster dogs and three adopted elderly greyhounds. And so we learn lots from every single dog as we go along. But if anyone had said to me back when I was creating the tarot deck, you're going to be working full-time with dogs, you're going to be running a school with students in 44 countries, then I would just have thought they were joking. So it's wonderful how things kind of changed, how one dog can completely change your life, as Tallulah did with Kat, of course, as well.
Well, and then that's the thing. CAC also has an extraordinary bio in terms of background, PhD in natural health, a doctorate in naturopathy, written 12 books, and then all this other career of being a coach, a meditation teacher, all this stuff. And yet when it comes to our animals, we start fresh, clean slate and completely at ground zero, like the fool in the tarot, and going, well, it's all going to work out. And then the dog says, yeah, as long as you follow my rules.
Yes, Wendy.
So that's what happened. And I'm a cat person, too. And I ended up getting a large German Shepherd who was fantastic. And I learned with him. And then I got a little dog. And it was like none of that applied. What? What?
Oh, they're all so different. That's what makes it so fascinating. That, like people, every dog has a different personality. And we learn lots from all of them. You know, they have their own challenges as well. So how interesting that your first dog was a German Shepherd, though, when you're a cat person. Because normally people tend to go for a small dog when they've been a cat person, first of all, and then graduate on, you know, kind of move on to larger dogs as they gain in confidence. So that's really interesting.
He chose me. I was told the other was coming. And at that point, I'm an intuitive. I'm thinking the other, you know, another person, you know, love interest. Well, the other is. And this dog had nowhere to go. And they said, here, will you hang on to him? You just hold him. We're going to get him a home. And so we need someplace to park him overnight. And well, that turned into 7 or 8 years.
Oh, don't you just love when that happens?
My two cats.
That's what happened with Charlie. He came to me briefly as a foster dog, and other dogs before Charlie as well. But Charlie arrived as a foster and ended up staying.
Yes.
So
yes.
I love how that happens.
Well, and the cats that I had at that time, they looked at me. They sat there for like a couple of weeks on top of the dresser asking me what I had done. And you really need to rethink this. This is not in our best interest. And I finally knew that it was okay when one of the cats got over and laid in the middle of his bed. And they also, he was absolutely no whisker moved, not a toenail, nothing. He laid rock still while one of the others investigated and sniffed every inch of him, and he didn't move a muscle. And it was like, okay, this is it. Okay, but moving on, That's what is so fantastic about these connections. And having somebody like Lisa had to be worth her weight in gold, CAC, because when I'm reading this about your stories and the things that you're having problems with, the fear-free, the no punishment, the no pain reward system, oh man, it's just like, wow. Then the dog feels, I think, respected.
Yes, I think that's really true. And Tallulah, my little dog, had been abused. We saw signs immediately that if you had a hairbrush anywhere near her, she would run. If you had a pole or a stick or a broom, she would run. Any kind of hose or water, she would run. So you just know what these people did to her to tease her and taunt her and maybe even hurt her. So we had to be very, very careful about that. And Lisa was able to really, in a few paragraphs, give me the succinct directions of what to do. I wasn't frightened. I wasn't scared. But I wanted to do the right thing. And Lisa was so generous. You know, I felt guilty because I thought, oh, gosh, you know, Lisa needs to get paid for her time. She wouldn't take a cent. And that's when the idea for the book, I thought, well, I would write up my stories a little bit better than I told her in shorthand. And when I did, then I said, Lisa, why don't you just give us the answers and maybe somebody else can learn from the mistakes I made or the challenges I have. And that's really how it evolved, sort of friend helping friend, with Lisa being there, this will work out, now here's what you do.
Well, okay, so I love the bed, because this is a beautiful book. The pictures are fantastic. And so we work through the beds where she defines, you know, there's three different, like the little, when Goldilocks goes into the house and tries the little bear's beds.
Yeah.
Goldilocks in her three different versions of, well, this one might be a little bit lumpy. This one's a little too tall. And this one's just right.
Well, it is quite mythological, isn't it? When you deal with living creatures, you also are dealing with mythology and stories as well. They bring this richness and depth into your life that when you begin to look at it, Of course, it's love at the center and the core, but there's all this other background that they bring and things you get to find out. I still learn something from my two dogs every single day.
Well, and that's part of this, too, is that it's a collaboration, and it's a give and a take. And there are some, yes, you need boundaries, but at the same time, you also have to respect that when the dog wants to go out and sniff things, a 50-minute sprint is not what they had in mind. And that may be what we have in mind because we're on a time crunch. But there's that thing of, okay, I have to figure out how I can be a good companion to my partner, the dog.
Yes.
That makes sense.
It is a partnership. I love that it's a partnership and that they are so responsive to us. They really do sense what we're feeling, what we're going through, which is why dogs are such incredible therapy companions as well. But meeting their needs is incredibly important. And I had a lot of real belly laughs when over CAC stories, I must say, because some of the things she was telling me, she's incredibly entertaining. CAC is the most dynamic person I've ever met, and very, very funny. And I was literally crying with laughter when she was telling me some of the stories of what was happening. And it's been absolutely amazing to see over that period of time the transformation that's taken place in the relationships with both Tallulah and Truffle, and the collaboration on both sides, which is what it is that we're looking for in any relationship, that it's not one-sided, but it is very much on both sides.
Well, and it's very basic. It's like, you know, okay, when we go outside to do something important, like relieve ourselves, we need to do it in, as you know, if you're the pet partner, okay, you got 3 seconds, do, go. And the pet, what are you thinking? I like, yeah, the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star chapter. That's a perfect one.
That was wonderful, yes.
Well, it sets the tone and gives you an idea that there might be just a little more sensitivity involved in this particular issue.
Absolutely.
Well, I tried to cover all the subjects that happened. You know, there are many, many, many more stories, as they say, in the Naked City. But I tried to cover a whole gamut of everything from bodily function to hurt feelings. And they all happened, you know, those and more. And it's just, I don't know. I think that my life was really rich and full. And then I met Tallulah and Truffle and Lisa. And the three of them just deepened it. It took me to greater levels than I ever thought possible. And it's hard to describe, but I think the intensity of feeling, the capacity for love, the partnership, as Lisa mentioned, you have to be gentle and silent and participatory with these animals at a completely intuitive level. And when you get them and they get you, all of a sudden, you have this relationship that is just irreplaceable and an honor.
Well, and there that shows up in this the chapters when Tallulah goes to camp, because you're looking at places for her to go and possibly be boarded and taken care of and out from under your supervision, and you want her to have a good experience. And then I think one of the ones you mentioned, it's very perfunctory business. Here's your paperwork. Here's your stuff. We'll put the dog in a cage. See you. Bye. And you were like, uh-huh, yeah, right. Ta-ta. But that's real. And that's what happens. I've had experiences where if I left the dog in the wrong place, he chewed his leash because they didn't take it out of the kennel that he was put in or right beside. I'm like, what the heck? Well, because that meant he was bored and frustrated and probably really, really irritated with me, not them.
Yes.
With this, it's a way of saying you gave her a chance to show you whether she was receptive to the caretaker. And that, again, you were just a little bit apprehensive, but this was a win-win. Will you share that? Because the dynamic, the relationship shows in her body behavior.
Well, yes, and I mean, Lisa can even answer that better. Lisa, why don't you take that?
With the caretaker, I just loved that CAC took Tallulah to two different places, and the first place was absolutely pristine and practically sterile, and Tallulah wasn't responded to particularly by the people there. They didn't make a fuss of Tallulah. They just wanted to talk about the business side of it with CAC and show off the kennels. And then they went to the other place, which was really rough and ready. And the people there made a huge fuss of Tallulah. She was the priority. And that was what swung it, as far as CAC was concerned, that Tallulah was going to be happy there because they genuinely cared about the dogs rather than just running it as a business. And I loved it that that happened and that Tallulah got that opportunity to be somewhere where she could really enjoy herself. And I really laughed when, you know, I read about how she came home absolutely filthy and exhausted because she just had such a great time. And really, it's so important that we let our dogs be dogs. So, you know, and not worry if they're going to get a bit muddy from running around and playing or if they need a good groom afterwards. The important thing is that they're happy and they're enjoying themselves. And Tallulah clearly thoroughly enjoyed herself there. So I loved it that CAC followed Tallulah's lead in the sense of looking at what the relationship was likely to be in each of those places between the people and her precious little soul that was Tallulah. So it's the perfect way to do it.
And I know Lisa's going to have to leave pretty quick, so I want to put a quick plug in here. The International School for Canine Psychology and Behavior, that's what Lisa Tenzin-Dolmet does, all right? And she's also the founder of the Dog Welfare Alliance and the chair of the Association of Into Dogs. This is stuff that if you're interested in dealing with a dog one-on-one, more, it's a very intimate relationship. It isn't about control. It isn't about dominance. It isn't about fear, intimidation, aggression. It's about understanding the behavior of the companion who is just as smart as you are and just communicates a little bit differently and requires you to step up to the plate. Okay, that's what Lisa's good at. The book Charlie, and this is Charlie the dog who came in from the wild, was it's a fantastic story. I watched it unfold, and you feel the difference and the evolution of this relationship. And a lot of us end up taking dogs that may have been abused and have a past we don't know about, and we have to make up for some of that. So I just I can't say enough wonderful words about how Lisa works with these animals and makes you feel that you can be a better person, not only a better caretaker for your animal companions, whether they're cats, dogs, or ferrets.
I think that's actually a really important point, Wendy, because with our dogs and with our cats and other animals, they teach us very much to be aware of who we are and how we're living our lives, how we're expressing ourselves, and particularly if an animal has been abused, as in very likely in Tallulah's case, and in Charlie's case, the fact that he was a feral dog, that he'd never lived in a home, that he wasn't used to human company, by monitoring ourselves and being aware of how our actions and our responses and even our tones of voice impact on those around us, dogs, of course we see it with people as well, but with dogs they're such incredible mirrors for our emotional state and they react instantly. So they really do teach us a lot in that respect as well.
To me, they're more observant of the smells, the tones of voice, the behavior, the posture, your words, if they're clipped or if they're elongated, and you, everything changes, and they are spot on with that because the words don't really relate as much as our intention and our tone. That speaks volumes. And you learn, my gosh, I could do this with other people if I'm more present in what I'm doing instead of, well, okay, let's go. I've got 20 minutes. You're going to have your dinner. I'm going to brush you because you've got the tangles in your hair. And then you're going to go potty. You're going to go back wherever it is, kennel, couch, bedroom, and off to my next adventure. And the dog's going, whoa, okay. And so then the dog acts out. That's been what I have seen, is because you didn't even give him the time of day. You gave him all the list of things that needed to be done, but not the engagement and the respect and the just that genuine care that thing that says, I really like being with you. And these are the things that we do together. Maybe we're getting improved, but I think they're giving us a learning curve that has an extra long curve.
Definitely. Yes.
Kat, when you got done with Lisa, what was it like? Because to me, she makes it sound so darn easy. Okay, was it hard with some of these suggestions to make it work between what she said? Okay, now change this, or was it something else? Well, why didn't I think of that?
Well, you know, all of the above, Wendy. First of all, Lisa just has a natural grace about her with people and with animals. So she has these instincts that she follows, plus her education. So she has the knowledge and the heart. And when she passed tips on to me, some of them were not that easy because it requires consistency. And like you were saying, we have our agenda here, do this, do that. And the dog isn't on the same, calendar as we are. So I would really have to discipline myself and say, all right, I have to cut up the treats. I have to have the treats ready because we're going to go out and we're going to take a walk. And I know I'm going to need to be prepared for that so that I can train Tallulah not to bark at the other dogs, not to be aggressive. And so I would have to really plan for that. Some of the things were, I think, that consistency, that discipline, that repetition. And when I did achieve a behavioral change in a positive way, we were all happy. And then then Tallulah started pottying in the house again after I moved houses. And so we had to start all over again from square one. And that was, and Lisa was good to me. This is where her love of people comes in, because she was understanding of me and knowing that I was frustrated. So she kind of talked me through it again. But I think that's what our book does for people, is no matter what they're feeling, and it can be very frustrating. It can be very fearful if you've never had a dog before. And so it counsels people all the way through. I just told my truth about how I was feeling and the antics that happened. And then Lisa comes in with the facts and how to do it. And she's also very soothing. So anybody who is getting a new animal or wanting to train them and believes in the fear-free training, then they ought to get this book, because it takes you through and the entire gamut of emotions and the challenges that you have with dogs and any other animal as well. Because it's not, I don't think that we're instant animal parents. I think we have to learn how to do that, how to listen, how to tune in, and how to become one with them in the Zen sense. So Lisa's advice and help, well, she's just succinct and compassionate. So she takes good care of her people as well as her animals.
The book is called The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Guide to Raising a Dog. Is that kind of an admission that, well, okay, I thought I knew what I was doing, and then the dog said, yeah, school time. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, she goes to school in the book, but I think if reading all of this, knowing the ups and downs, you got a good schooling as well.
Well, that's it. It's the education of mom, don't you think?
Yes.
By a little dog who's just all full of love and life. And I had to get through all the antics and the bad behavior and retrain it, reform it, so that we could live a compatible and a harmonious life.
Well, and in the book, there also you also approach, there are other animals as well. So it's not just Tallulah, it's the other companions. We're going to take a break, and in about 2 minutes, we're going to take a break. So I want to just acknowledge that, Lisa, you've done a fabulous job making people, I think, feel comfortable with, for one thing, that apprehension. Am I doing it wrong? And if I've done it wrong, can I correct it? Can I come back from setting a bad example to, okay, this is how we're going to do it now? That's, I think, what I take away from this book. And I think when we get over our own fear and our own self, recrimination of, oh, man, my dog is going to be so messed up because I goofed. And there's always that thing of, no, you can correct it. And I think that comes through in this book of, here, try this. And you're just as gentle with people as you are with the pets. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's really lovely. But no, it's true. You can change things. We all make mistakes. And and we can correct those mistakes. It just means that if we do something that means that we damage any level of the trust our dogs have in us, then we have to work extra hard to regain that trust. And again, it comes back to teaching us to be more self-aware so that we don't make the same mistake again. But kindness and compassion, using force-free methods, science-based methods as well. Of course, force-free doesn't mean permissive. It means you still set boundaries. There's things that you don't want your dog to go counter-surfing or charging down the road after strangers as soon as you open the door. But it means putting those boundaries in place in a way that makes the dog want to actually cooperate with you rather than feel forced to, and rewarding all the behavior that you want. So it's a lovely way to work with dogs, and it definitely works. And Kak really demonstrates that in her stories in the book as well. You know, she's a fantastic dog mom, as she calls herself now. So, and she's had that love and devotion right from the start, but that learning curve is just incredible when you're going through it.
We're going to take a break here. I want to come back and just address the different feelings that were mentioned before. The Supposedly Enlightened Person's Guide to Raising a Dog, Kak Young, and you just heard Lisa Tenzin-Dolma, who was the behavior specialist, the friend indeed, who when the SOS came out said, "Here, I got this, all right," and she can get it for you. Up next on Conscious Living.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Begin by finding a comfortable, relaxed position. Let out whatever stress is in your body. It could be from the time you left your daughter's blouse in the dryer too long and it shrunk four sizes, or when you donated her private diary to the public library, or when you thought chaperoning the school dance meant actually dancing in the school dance. Whatever it is, let it go. The fire you started with that experimental dinner, let it go. The time you drove away from the gas pump with the gas pump, let it go. 3, very relaxed. 2, there you go. 1.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are 4 times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day, and the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This message is for all of you sitting in the passenger seat. And apologies if it gets a little uncomfortable, but how does it feel to be at the mercy of someone who thinks a random text is more important than your life? Someone who takes their eyes off the road while speeding along in a 3-ton hunk of steel. Freaky, right? Well, why not just ask them to stop? Or better yet, volunteer to text for them. It might be a little awkward, but believe me, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take a deep breath in and let go of the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you hit that piñata into your neighbor's yard. Let it go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
It's
Couch and Living and Power Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. And my guest, I was so fortunate to get both of them together, the supposedly enlightened person's guide to raising a dog with Kak Young and Lisa Tenzin-Dolma, because this is a collaboration. It's a labor of love, dealing with pets in a way that's compassionate, that is kind, considerate, and offering to see the animal on their terms, not just saying, this is my way or the highway. It's a, how can we make this work? And yet we also need boundaries. All right. And so getting something consistent, I think that's one of the best words, is consistent. And sometimes we as humans aren't good at being consistent. We have a lot of emotions and deadlines and attitudes and egos. Wow. That can derail the best pet relationship. So I wanted to get back. And Kak, you, when you discovered, like, you through the Glastonbury Tarot, when you discovered Lisa and followed along with the stories, what was the most helpful of what you got from Lisa with your dogs?
With my dogs?
Yes.
Well, I think I trusted her so much, and I had gotten to know personally and in person. I'd made several trips to Bath because we formed a really nice friendship, and she was writing a book, and so she would ask me to take a look at it and comment before she submitted it. I would do the same thing, and she would offer suggestions. So we became literary pals, and you cannot help but fall in love with Lisa Tenzin-Dolma. She's just one of those kinds of amazing, generous, giving, loving people. So we had this relationship, and as I got to know her and her dogs, and frankly, you know, I knew dogs. Friends had dogs, and I would visit them, and but I was never really connected to them. And I saw through Lisa this really heart and soul connection that she had with dogs. And then I watched her go through the process with Charlie, the dog who came in from the wild, the Romanian rescue she had. And then I watched Sky decline a little bit and how Lisa took care of him. And I was really moved by that. And I had met the dogs, but, you know, they were okay. They were still dogs. But as I watched that relationship develop, I think that my heart became prepared for when I met Tallulah one cold, crisp winter night in Toluca Lake at a Christmas fair. She was outside, up for adoption. When I met her, this something just happened. I said, oh my God, I didn't think I was capable of that kind of a canine connection. Like I said, I have cats and I've had them for many, many years, but it's a different thing. Cats are much more independent. Dogs become very dependent on you emotionally and psychologically. So, and I was unprepared for that. I hadn't been schooled in that. So, but I couldn't not take Tallulah. I couldn't not adopt her. I don't know what it was, but I did. And then her behavioral problems came forth, and I was brought into her world as opposed to cats being brought into mine, and they conformed to my agenda. I was brought into Tallulah's, and all of a sudden, I had to be engaged with her if we were going to make this work. I either had to send her back, or I had to adapt to her needs. And one of her needs became apparent, and that was she needed a companion. She wasn't happy in the back of the car. I had a lovely, lovely little thing set up for her with a big purple cushion, and she could be in the very back of the Jeep. She had her own area, but she hated that. So when we got a second dog for her that became her companion, Tallulah's life changed as well. And that was a miracle. That was like an amazing thing. Lisa had suggested, well, perhaps she needs company. And I thought, uh-oh, what does that mean? And
yeah. Uh-huh. Company, two dogs.
I already have five cats. I don't need another dog, another mouth to feed, another thing to deal. Well, and then of course we got Angel Dog. He's absolutely the most beautiful Zen puppy. And I don't know if he had been abused, but he had been emotionally neglected. So he just came in here and glommed up on all the love. And Tallulah looks after him like a mother hen. And then he is uncomfortable if she's out of his sight. So it's very, very cute. And they fill up that gap so that I can actually get some work done during the day. And yet, you know, when it's time for news at 5:30, Truffle wants to watch David Muir. He wants to watch the news. So life stops while we watch the news. That's Truffle's time. And you would just adapt to that. It's now charming. It used to be irritating, but now it's now charming. And that, I think, is what Lisa just kind of says, all right, well, now here's how to work this. And I was so lucky. I mean, it was like winning the lotto to have Lisa Tenzin-Dolma in my life, because she really talked me through it. I don't know that I would have come through this as well as I did. I mean, I used to think, you know, I had to shout at the dog to make commands. All right, Tallulah, do this. And
yes. Yeah.
Lisa reminded me that they can hear perfectly. So I didn't, I didn't need to sound like a drill sergeant. I could just simply say Tallulah. And, but when you're trying to get somebody or something to comply. So she was the one who really encouraged me to use the positive stuff. And it's magic. It's truly magic. Three or four times of doing something and the dog gets it because they just want to please you. So if you let them know that they are pleasing you and this is the way we go, it works so much better and more quickly than if you do negative things to them or yell at them or shame them or any of that. And you can just watch these little spirits blossom in front of you when you use a positive reward and positive treatment. It was just amazing to me. And Lisa talked me through it. I mean, it's not that, you know, I went to hit the dog or any of that, but my tendency would be to correct it in a sterner way. Mm-hmm. I was raised by Catholic nuns. They were stern, so that's what I knew. But the gentle, tiny approach is just wonderful. And cats, you don't ever correct a cat. I mean, so no. I had no experience.
Cats, oh yeah, get over yourself. See you, bye. Put the food now and disappear. Okay, good.
Exactly. And excuse me, but you will do what I want.
And
we comply, but it's a very different thing. They're not like in your face demanding.
No. No. And the dog, there's that look of, all right, you know, I want something. Now pay attention. And you have to figure out, okay, is it food? Is it going out? Is there somebody here? Is the cat in their room when it's not supposed to be? There are all these things, is 50 questions of what is it? And after a while, you understand when that little eyebrow is lifted or when the tongue is out. When mine, it's like when they're hungry and the food dish is empty, they come in and they lick their lips. Oh, and so just lip smacking of, okay, oh yeah, either the food dish or the water bowl is empty. And I've learned to look for that to see, because it's so obvious. And if you're, I'm like, how could I have not noticed that lip smacking thing means there's something to do with the food dish? And it's made me much more observant, and I still miss things, but that's the one thing I really was shocked at, that they were so literal with some of their mannerisms.
Well, I received some training from a Huna master in Hawaii years and years ago when I was studying Huna, and he was telling us that when you want to change behavior in a person, in yourself, or you want to change a belief, that you really treat your subconscious like a dog, that it responds to positive things. It responds to what's going to be good for it. So if you want, so you work with it in a very positive way. You never scold your subconscious, but you tell it the benefits. You let it know what the benefits are. If we lose weight, then we will be able to run that marathon, walk easier, breathe easier. We can do that. So you work with your subconscious as if it was a dog. Well, that never really registered to me on a visceral level until I got my own dog, and I understand how that really works. And so I've been able to, just as you say, Wendy, I've been able to understand people a little bit better, have a little bit more empathy for them, and don't ever tell anybody I said this, but I've been able to get my own way with them a little bit more easily because I've put treats in front of them.
Yes. Yes. Rewards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not physical ones, but little rewards, whether it's a compliment or not, not making it about me, but making it about them, whatever it is. And I watch them respond too. So it's a lesson in just behavior, global behavior, as well. I've tried it on my cats and I've failed miserably, but they're still who they are.
Well, the part of this is there are a lot of, in the book, you cover a lot of territory. And I know, having had the two dogs that I had, one would get in the car when it wasn't moving. If I would mow the lawn, the German Shepherd would get in the car just to be in the car. And it's like, oh, okay, this is peachy. My other dog does not like the sound of the lawnmower. And the car, we first had to get her used to it because it gave her, I had her from the time she was a puppy, she had car sickness. And so she has a special way she likes to be in the car. And it's, as long as it isn't moving, it's like that's to get away from the lawnmower, not to be in the car, but just to hide from the lawnmower. So their motivation, they were different in their personalities. And I had to learn the difference that they weren't both just dogs. And that was a challenge, too, because I just assumed, okay, this dog did that, that dog, same thing, you know, and there we go. And like, no, we had to start over.
Well, I know it's when the dog goes from being a thing or a possession to being a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, and when I first came up with the title for the book, it was The Enlightened Person's Guide to Owning a Dog. And then we realized, wait a minute, we don't own dogs. We raise them, you know, with their permission. So I changed that. And then it became, well, it's kind of like the supposedly enlightened person, because I went into it, oh, I've had cats. I know what to do. You feed them, you put water out, you take them to the vet. It's just fine. I can handle this. It's not a problem. So I went in, not necessarily arrogant, but confident.
Yes.
And boy, yeah, was that changed. Within 24 hours, I was no longer whistling Dixie and walking down the street. I was like, oh, my God, what do I do now? Lisa!
Well, and that's part of it, too. The things like the mistakes, the going to the groomer and being able to tell the difference between a groomer your dog likes, and if there's an issue, is it the other dogs that are there versus is it something, a behavior that's happening with that particular person? Those things, you have to be a sleuth to figure out. But when you do, the dog has a better experience, and then you do, too.
Well, yes, yes. And these days, so many grooming salons, you know, they're like, take a ticket, stand in line, boom, boom, boom. They get them in, they get them out. And they don't spend the attention to the dog that they need to. So if we learn how to do it at home, that's, of course, the best, because there's trust. If there's no time for that, I think we really have to research the people. I mean, I've had my dog Truffle hurt 3 times by groomers, because they have cut him too close, they've injured him, they've done something to him because they're working too fast. It's like they're on the clock, boom, boom, boom. And I really have gone to the fact that I either take him and bathe him myself and then get him groomed and cut by somebody I really trust, maybe a little bit less frequently because it is expensive, but I still want to go to somebody who I know is going to take the time and take the care and not just give them 15 minutes in and out, bye-bye.
Well, and I think that takes a little bit, you know, a more preparation and more research, because sometimes you have to go to 2 or 3 people before you figure out what the happy connection is. And that same thing with a vet. Same thing with a vet.
Well, exactly. And I think that, you know, it's up to us to really research where our pets go, and the kennels as well. I think it's you just don't want to dump your dog somewhere. You have to experience them and be a detective. Some people are in it for the money. Some people really do care, and some people have a combination of both. So I've realized that this becomes, it's a child. It's a living being, and as you would take care for your child or your toddler, you must take that for your dog as well.
All right. Now we get into separation anxiety. And you, the other thing that you also addressed that I thought was really well handled was the hurt feelings. And there was an inadvertent accident on the way from the puppy running in from outside to go get the treat really quickly. And then the cage door slammed on the puppy.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I was just not paying full attention. I was trying to get things done quickly, and all of a sudden our routine was broken, and the puppy thought, little Truffle thought he'd done something really, really wrong, and he hadn't. It was just a series of mistakes, but he went into his cage, and he pouted, and he wouldn't come out. He thought that he was, I guess he just thought he was a terrible person. And it took a lot of time for me to work with him to make sure that he trusted me again and we could start anew. And it was, well, you saw the picture of his little face. He was heartbroken.
Yeah. He's just like, never again.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And he'd done nothing wrong. So it was like, I felt really bad. And at that moment, I mean, I was grateful for the experience because I really got the depth and tenderness of their feelings and their sensitivity as sentient beings. I really got that. I mean, I loved the book, When Elephants Weep. And the more we understand about the animal kingdom, but certainly there it was in my house, a real expression of sadness, disappointment, and hurt. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea that they could feel this way. So it changed everything for me at that point. I really did just do a 180 and say, okay, before I do anything with these dogs, I'm going to check in emotionally with them. And it's not hard. It sounds like a lot of work, but it's not. It's just tuning in your radar, tuning into the right radio station and being on that radar. And so now I have a shortcut to all of that. But at the moment, I had to learn.
You have an intro, the foreword by Mark Beckoff. That's really pretty cool.
Isn't that great? I must say, I can't take credit for that. Lisa and Mark admire each other and are compatriots in a lot of things. He admires her work. So she was able to ask him to do that. And fortunately, he did read the book, and he was complimentary. And he congratulated both of us on the launch of the book. He's just a wonderful man and a great soul. So we were honored.
Have you been able to develop a little bit more intuition with your pets as a result?
Of course. Absolutely. I think I'm aware of layers of people and what's going on inside of them a lot more. At least I stop. It's there naturally with everybody, but I think we're so busy on our agendas a lot that we just block that out. So that little trap door in my brain, in my seventh chakra, if you will, is much more open now. And I notice a lot of things. I think too that I can anticipate what's going to happen. I watch them hear a truck three blocks away and they're alert. And so you become that, not paranoid or nervous, but you just become much more sensitive to your environment when you hang around dogs.
Well, you know, for me, that little dog thing was a completely, totally, absolutely, and yet, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
What have I gotten myself into? And then I realize all the other people who have this little dog thing, and you just go back to school 101, they are completely different than large dogs. And of course, each dog is unique, but I've learned so much in terms of being more patient, in being more perceptive, and allowing that he gives me different cues and tunes into different aspects of his environment than my other dogs do. And so it's a compliment to know that, oh my gosh, he's keeping watch on these other things with the others. Just doesn't even register. And he has been a very important teacher for me to expand my sense of connection to different elements of my environment that I didn't notice with the cats, the other dogs, the other pets until he stepped in. And that was just another like a wow moment, an aha. I was like, good grief. I needed this lesson, this companion to give me a new appreciation for how we live with all the others in our environment, and we always have something to learn. I just, it's like, and he was a little dog. I'm like, after getting, you know, totally annoyed, why, what was I doing? What was I thinking? It was like, I don't know how I would live without him.
Yes, and I think what you just said is that it opens us up to sensitivities of, for example, like other dog people. Because when you see another dog person, you kind of connect with them and say, okay, so you're probably on my wavelength and me on yours because we have dogs. Therefore, we see the world a little differently than anybody else. And, it, you know, I think it's like when you get a new car, all of a sudden you see that car on the, yeah, on the road a lot more. And you become aware that these other people, okay, they have a sensitive relationship with another being too. So we can understand each other. I think that's why dog people glom together. And cat people probably don't have the same kind of a connection. Cats are wonderful, and I will never not live with cats because they are sensational. But I think having dogs just makes the world open us. Like you said, they're like little can openers. They open things in us that may have been dormant or may have been untested before, and all of a sudden, boom, all this stuff pops out, and we become much more alive and much more aware.
Well, I tell you what, I've still got a cat, one cat, down to one cat right now. I've been up to five. And the thing is, there's always something new to learn from my pets. I just, the world is fuller. The house may not be as clean, and I don't care because I would prefer to have these relationships. They force me to be a little bit more human and less judgmental of others, because I know, okay, we can't do everything all the time. It isn't always going to be perfect, but darn it, I can try, and sometimes they force me to be more, I guess, in some way, shape, or form, appreciative of what I have instead of thinking, well, it'll be better if I don't have as many or if I have more. It's like, wow, there are some days that are so perfect because they're here. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. 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 I think every morning I get up and get say, up all right, and say, all right, my life is better because of these little creatures.
If you had one thing with this book, now that this is, you know, this is a labor of love and it's completed, and it, I think it's going to do a lot of good for people, whether they want dogs, cats, or pets, it's relationships that this really clues you in on. If you want them to take away something from the book, what would it be?
It would be that our lives are very fabulous when we're with human beings. But when we let those animals in and we're really willing to be their students and learn from what they have to teach us, the richness abounds. I think we grow in our experience as human beings, and the world is a much better place with a dog and a cat and a pet in it.
I think that's perfect. I remember when I got Gracie, and she's a part German Shepherd. She looks kind of like a cross between a German Shepherd and a Golden Retriever. And at one point, Max, the German Shepherd, was her teacher, and she had a best pal she thought was a prince, and he was Prince Charming, Golden Retriever, and they were all buds. And she came home, and she's outside. The other two are somewhere else, and she's looking up at the sky, and I realized, oh my gosh, it's snowing. And she just sat there, and you could see the look on her face and her posture that she was just totally entranced because these flakes were in the sky surrounding her. And from that moment on, she has been just absolutely mesmerized, and she loves snow. I think it's because it's the surprise factor. Someday the sky is clear, and then the sky is full of these things. And how does that happen? It just makes you feel, I appreciate wonder and nuance and different things, because their exposure, they have such that little child view of, wow, what next? What will I discover today? Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. And I think that they are filled with joy over the simple things, and they're not afraid to express it and not afraid to be in the moment and celebrate whatever it is comes their way. And I love that lesson from them. I love it.
We came back from a walk a couple nights ago, and Gracie is very good now. She's been around for, oh gosh, it's 11 years. It doesn't seem that long. But anyway, the look on her face, I saw her eyes, the eyebrows go up, and the image I got was the sweet potato rice and chicken dessert that I have made for her. And we came back from a walk, and that was the look on her face. I'm like, oh yeah, fine. Here it is. It's a food moment. And she's telling me, I'm ready for dessert. So anyway, that's how you approach, I think most people approach most people and pets and animals. It's a food factor through your stomach. Okay. There we go. So I'm thinking of great treats. Great treats. And I love your book. I think it's a delicacy. All right. And it deserves to be on everybody's hit dessert list. How's that?
Oh, Wendy, thank you so much. You have been so gracious and so supportive. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And website, you want me to recommend a website, or do you have one? Because I know it's HubbleandHattie.com.
HubbleandHattie.com are the publishers. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It comes out officially October 20th in the United States, but it is pre-order on Amazon right now. And people can Google Lisa Tenzin-Dolma if they're interested in her dog behavioral canine certification program. And I just have a website called CacYoung.com. And by the way, I'm working on a new book called The 1 Minute Cat Manager. So I can't wait to share that with you.
We'll talk again. Thank you. The supposedly enlightened person's guide to raising a dog. You'll feel a whole lot better after you read this, okay? And your dog probably doubly so. Thanks for listening.